Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Run like a wild man.
I want you to struggle and I want you wrestle with them angels.
Delirious. From Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct journey here. Stadium time is 9:14 p.m. Central Standard Time. Your digital audio device is tuned to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by the friendly folks at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, Drew Croson, at CenterCrow2 on Twitter. You can find me at CenterCrow on Venmo. To one side of me, via the magic of the internet, Mr. Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for statistician.
Not sunburned somehow after spending a week at the beach.
Oh, that's right. You got to go to the beach for a week.
Yeah.
Not here yet, but assumed to be alive and well is the AU chief. We will hopefully announce him when he arrives. Thoughts and prayers until then, chief.
Are we doing this thing like when I fell asleep on the couch of just being super worried about chief?
I'm not worried about chief because he told us he wasn't going to be here yet.
And he has kids.
So and he has excuses. He has two kids under the age of five. So there's no telling what he's doing right now. There's no rhyme or reason. Bedtime is all consuming and it takes all hands on deck. So tonight's show, it's peak off season. We're going to talk NBA draft lottery, which happened minutes ago. We're going to talk football schedules that are happening 10 years from now in some cases. And
I'm going to give you 7 minutes, 7 whole minutes to talk about.
But first,
you want to talk about
7 whole minutes, 7 minutes in heaven.
So mark it down. If you don't want to hear it, skip 7 minutes ahead. So that's when my timer is going to go off.
But if you do want to hear it, guys, it is the last podcast prior to the granddaddy of them all, La Grande Boucle, the great, the big belt, the big loop around France, the Tour de France 2021. And this is your official College Magnolia Tour de France 2021 preview. Big thing going on this year is, as you might know, Chris Froome riding for Team Israel's Startup Nation. Not a favorite. This is a four-time Tour de France winner. But really, anybody who thinks he's going to win this thing hasn't watched professional bike racing in
Hang on. I just want to ask, did you call
years.
Israel a Startup Nation?
That's the name of the team, right? Israel, colon. Israel, colon, Startup Nation.
I just thought you were just making a statement there. Okay.
No. Anyways. The name of the cycling team is Israel, colon, Startup Nation.
Okay.
Who knows why? I mean, Israel, the Arab Emirates, Kazakhstan, Bahrain, all have teams in this race. Not necessarily like riders from those countries, but their countries have decided a great way to promote their brand is by attaching it to professional cycling. The two main, speaking of countries that most of us have not been to, the two main contenders this year and in every other stage race of the last 2 or 3 years are from Slovenia, home country of the one Luka Doncic. You've got Primoz Roglic.
Currently not in the playoffs. I just want to.
Correct. Throw that in there. Primoz Roglic and Tadej Pogačar. Most people call them Raj and Podge, or Rog and Pog, because they are so incredibly good, so talented in different ways, as a matter of fact. They're big-time rivals. They're also extremely young. Tadej Pogačar is like, he's 21 or 22 years old. It's pretty unbelievable that he is a defending now Tour de France winner. And if you remember, Ryan, last year he won the Tour.
I don't.
He won the Tour over his Slovenian countryman, on the last day. And Raj, Primoz Roglic, had the yellow jersey up until the last day for like 2 whole weeks and then lost it on the very last day to Tadej Pogačar in a time trial up a mountain. It was unbelievable. It was one of the most exciting days in bike racing. But look for Roglic to avenge that loss this year because he has a much, much, much stronger team than Pogačar because I mean, Jumbo-Visma has got Wout van Aert, Tom Dumoulin. It's pretty ridiculous. Wout's going to win a Tour de France at some point in his career, I think. And we haven't even started talking about the New York Yankees of pro cycling. Ineos Grenadiers, formerly known as Team Sky. They've got 3 guys on their team who have won a Tour de France. Two guys now who have won a Tour de France. Yet one of them, Egan Bernal, isn't even going to be there because they think he doesn't have much of a shot. They let him go win the Giro d'Italia. A guy you might not have heard of in a while, the guy who won it in 2018, Geraint Thomas.
Probably haven't.
Geraint Thomas from Wales is 35 years old, just like yours truly. And he's really going to try to win this thing again. So you've got a little bit of age versus the youth in the Slovenians. So I really think
so that's like Team Phil Mickelson.
Exactly. So
okay.
Plus he wrote a book. He's a genuinely funny guy. He hosts a podcast. Geraint Thomas is like very much the Mickelson of this race. And the two Slovenians are very much like machines. There's not a lot alike. I can't tell you one thing about Tadej Pogačar's personal life. What he likes, what he doesn't like. I can't tell you much about Roglic. But meanwhile, these other dudes I know a lot about. I watch a lot of these races, but yet these two Slovenians who are going to win this thing are ghosts outside of training and riding bikes. Those are your favorites. I would say the dark horse might be the Colombian Rigoberto Urán from Team EF. He's a really dark horse, I think, but he has a shot. He always has a shot. He's an interesting dude because allegedly he doesn't wear a heart rate monitor or a power meter. He rides by feel, where these other dudes all have computers hooked up to them all the time. He's out there just like old school.
That feels like the basis for a movie.
He's like
he doesn't use all the tech. He just rides.
He's just a guy from Colombia who just rides a bike. He's like those old baseball players who didn't wear batting gloves. That's the way that I feel about him. Like. What was that one? There was one baseball player a long time ago who like famously didn't use batting gloves and would like urinate on his hands.
How long ago were you talking?
The 90s and 2000s.
Okay.
And he would pee on his hands, and that's how he would like toughen up his hands to this is a true story.
I heard that part of it.
Somebody listening to this, probably Drew McCracken's gonna know who I'm talking about. That's my back when
somebody
I was
from the long, long ago of 1990s.
That's when I was like really into baseball. I think the King of the Mountains jersey, as you know, is Polkadot, will probably go to one of the Slovenians as well because they're both super good climbers. The dark horse winner for that might be a Rafa Majka. I don't know. Mike Woods.
Yeah, you got 1 minute left. You got anything else?
Yeah, I do. The more important, the race to watch, I think, is on the very first day. My favorite bike rider, a guy named Mathieu van der Poel from the Netherlands. Stage one is Brest to Landerneau, and he is only, in my opinion, he's only in this race because he's not going to finish this race in Paris because he's going to leave halfway through the tour to go try to win the gold medal in mountain biking in the Olympics. But before he does, he is going to try to win stage one of the tour so that he's in yellow for a couple of days.
This is a bigger story than anything else you've said. So Olympic cycling is during the tour?
It is this year because they announced the dates of the Olympics after they had already announced the dates of the tour.
Seems like somebody messed something up.
100%. And it's because of COVID, obviously, because last year they weren't going to actually overlap. But this year, I believe there is a one-day... Like, I think there are... Oh, my timer's going off. I think there's like 1 or 2 days rest a guy could have if he wants to ride the tour and then go try to win gold medal in the Olympics in road cycling.
That would be like Olympic basketball starting like the day after the NBA finals.
Correct. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of people who think there's going to be kind of a mass exodus after about the second.
Anybody that's not like in the top 10?
Yeah, after the second rest day in the tour of guys who want to go ride the Olympics. Because there's some guys like Julien Alaphilippe has already said he's not riding for France in the Olympics. Because the tour is more important. It's similar to the World Cup is more important to soccer players than the Olympics are. The tour is more important to most of these dudes in the Olympics. But some of these guys, like Van der Poel, compete in mountain biking in the Olympics. And Olympic mountain biking is still the biggest deal in mountain biking. So he is going to... And he doesn't have a shot of winning the tour because he's not much of a climber. But day one suits him particularly well. So I think he's here just to get a yellow jersey and then bolt and go win a gold medal in the Olympics. Because he'll be the first person to wear a yellow jersey and win a gold medal in a different cycling discipline in the same year ever. So he's a beast because he can do everything.
Last thing, who is your winner? Who are you predicting?
Oh, I think Primož Roglič from Slovenia is going to beat Tadej Pogačar because after last year, I think he's out. He's on a mission. But why? I mean, you never know. These guys are so good. And you also never know because the course is nuts this year. The weather's going to be crazy. I bet there's going to be a bunch of dudes get hurt and have to quit.
So, first week of August, we'll see some really good video from the tour of just a bunch of cyclists crashing?
First week of August. This thing starts on Saturday.
Oh. I was thinking,
it starts the 26th. That's why we're doing this.
Huh. Okay. Anyways, okay, so first week of July.
So it's 21 days. 21 days of bike racing starting on Saturday. Get excited, Ryan. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to go ahead and apologize.
Let's get more excited about NBA mock drafts.
NBA mock drafts, there have been a ton already out, and there's going to be a ton more come out because the actual NBA draft lottery
The lottery was today. The combine was also today. Isn't that right?
Yes. The NBA...
Is that usually the case?
No. Everything's slammed together. In my opinion, though, the NBA does do it better than any other sport by putting the draft, like, the week after the season's over. So you kind of have... The NBA offseason is just jam-packed right after the season ends. The big winner in this is going to be probably Isaac Okoro, I think, because his Cavaliers end up with the third pick in the draft, and they stink. So they're really going to be is a very deep, very good draft. And
they're really looking for a scorer, right?
They need somebody else.
Going to be one of the best defenders in the league. And mm-hmm. then you've got Colin Sexton, who's been a good point guard, but he's kind of trying to shoulder the offensive load, it looks like, and that's been disastrous. So.
His off-on splits are crazy. Like, basically, when he's not on the court, the Cavs don't have a chance. His average – Colin, let's put it this way. When the Cavaliers lose – Colin Sexton averages 22 points a game. In their wins, he averages 30. So he has
so
to score
somebody else to
30
score
points
when he's not having his best night.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at some mock drafts. Our old friend Jalen Green seems to be a popular pick to go to Cleveland.
I think it's a really good pick for them because he shoots the ball well. He likes to dunk the ball, gets his own shot. He doesn't like Okoro is not going to want the ball on every possession. But he also plays, I think he plays adequate defense. He's not like Okoro where it's like his number one thing. But yeah, I think the other winner of this draft being it one of the deepest drafts is the Rockets. The Rockets have a ton of picks.
I see one, two, three first rounders.
They have three first round picks. And one of those, because of the lottery, they got really lucky. They have the number 2 pick in this draft. Sure.
Yeah, and they've also got – oh, never mind. That's pick the traded away. So, yeah, number 2 pick in the draft, and then 2 more in the 20s, right around Sharif Cooper range. I don't know if they need a point guard or not. But.
I've seen him mocked to them in a couple of drafts.
I hope not. He deserves better.
Well, it depends on if they get the kid from Gonzaga, Suggs. If they get Suggs, then they probably won't go after Cooper. If they go somewhere else at number 2 – maybe they do. It's kind of like, I mean, they're going to basically draft three-fifths of a starting lineup of first rounders. More likely, they're going to trade these guys, some of these picks, for established NBA veterans. But
because they don't have, it's not just the 3 first round picks this year. Don't they have like 10 first round picks over the next 4 years or something like that?
They have a lot. They don't have as many as the Thunder, who have like
maybe it's the Thunder I'm thinking of.
The Thunder have like, I think over a dozen.
Chief.
Oh, the AU Chief. Another guy who wants to talk a little NBA hoops.
Hey, guys.
The Thunder had it.
You already missed our Tour de France talk, so good timing.
Oh. Darn.
So the Thunder had a chance to get 2 top 5 picks if the lottery had shaken a certain way. It didn't, so they ended up with just the number 6 pick. Because they could have had Houston's pick had it been outside of the top 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they ended up with just their own pick, which is the 6th. So Houston got real lucky, leaving the Thunder with its own pick. The Thunder also have the 16th pick. The Thunder also have the 18th pick. So
for Sharif Cooper... it seems like he's kind of settled in the mock drafts to a pretty tight range of like the early 20s. I mean, there's a lot of teams there that need point guards. Sometimes it's the Knicks, the Lakers, Clippers. I think Auburn fans aren't exactly happy with the Knicks, so maybe Kofi Don't goes there. And they don't. We've talked about him needing offensive weapons already established to really – be comfortable in his rookie year, and the Knicks don't have that at all.
Yeah.
Right. So, if he were to go to the Lakers, though, I mean, I think that'd be a great fit for him.
Well, Sharif could go if Sharif going to the Knicks would be good for Sharif in that. That is kind of the one thing the Knicks needed.
Like they didn't have any offense.
Best player on at point was Derrick Rose, and he's. Right. My age.
And maybe not a bad player for Sharif to learn from.
Yeah.
If he's back in, I mean, I don't think he's back in New York next year, though. So
no, I don't think he is either.
Yeah, but I think their other point guard option was Elfrid Payton, who really struggled in the playoffs.
Yeah. And so I think Knicks fans are desperate for somebody to go in there and run point. New York loves a point guard. It's a point guard town.
Use Jared Harper.
Well,
I don't know.
They're not going to play Jared. But they.
I mean, if you need a point guard that can shoot,
I know.
You got one.
But they want. It's a point guard town. They're gonna. If they take Sharif, the negative to it will be, the expectations on that kid. To be. Jason Kidd, next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this is.
And the good thing is that he wouldn't be a top 10 pick, so maybe that helps a little bit with that. And you know, Sharif, through all of the drama and everything that went on last year, handled himself extremely well. So I don't really worry about the stage being too big for him or anything like that.
And he will be hyped up. Every single flashy pass he has for the Knicks will be on SportsCenter. I mean, the Knicks.
It's true.
He will sell a lot of number 8 jerseys or number 2 jerseys or whatever he is.
Or if he goes to the Lakers, I mean, it's the same thing.
Well, Lakers have another player, a couple of players that might be a little bit overshadowing.
Well, no, what I'm saying is it's a big media town, and he'll have just as many highlights setting up LeBron and Anthony Davis.
Is Derrick Rose not still in New York?
I think he's free.
Free agent.
Here's the problem with LeBron. I love LeBron, but name the last time LeBron had a rookie point guard.
I mean, LeBron's been his own point guard.
Right. Exactly. So, like, And when he did have a young point guard that wasn't Kyrie, it was like Mario Chalmers, and he berated him. Like, it was yeah. Mario Chalmers was not beloved by LeBron in Miami for the most part.
What about the other team in LA, the Clippers?
That's a good fit. That'd be a good fit for Sharif, because they've made it work with Rondo, who famously can't shoot at all. So Sharif, I think, would be – not would be. He is much younger than Rajon Rondo. He is. He's got a little – he's got a couple steps on Rajon, and he brings more to the table offensively.
There's – I have thought of them both as a similar type player, though. Undersized, good distributor, can't shoot. So in that way, they're very similar.
The difference is that I don't even know if Rajon tries to shoot layups anymore.
Right.
Like, he didn't even try to get to the basket. Where Sharif, his whole game is
just not a 3-point shooter.
Right, Sharif's whole game is predicated on the fact that he can get to the basket whenever he wants to.
Right.
And so you have to over defend him, which then opens up passing lanes. Rajon is just, his basketball IQ is.
Right.
Through the roof.
Off the charts.
And he just can't shoot. Which makes no sense.
It's unfortunate.
So what do we think about the other Auburn guy in this draft who's kind of been exploding through, you get that ASMR there, Chief?
Yeah, he's just chewing right ice right to the microphone.
Making up for lost time.
Sorry about that, guys.
Our other Auburn guy flying up draft boards, JT Thor, who has gotten a lot of love at the Combine today.
He has become the Yi Jean Leon of this draft.
I mean, he could be a top 20 pick, or he could be a middle of the second round pick. I don't really know, but hey, it only takes one team to fall in love with somebody with a 7'3" wingspan. So.
Yeah,
right.
Moises Alou, Ryan, according to my wife, who Googled it and texted me, Moises Alou is the player that peed on his hands to toughen him up.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, and they didn't develop calluses, so they were tough and then developed calluses because he peed on his hands. Right, Chief, you have no clue what we're talking about, but...
Goodness gracious.
That definitely was part of the... was part of it. Because urine hardens your skin and prevents calluses, so...
Who among us hasn't?
Who among us hasn't thought, what if there was just a way to harden my... to tighten up the skin on my hands where it wouldn't develop calluses? Yeah. That's it. JT. So, Ryan, I referenced a guy named Yi Jian Leon. Do you know who that is?
Is this the guy that you have talked about that, like, his only workout was against chairs?
That is correct. So, Yi Jian Leon was an NBA draft pick. He was not expected to enter the NBA draft until 2009. But then in 2006, he just decided to enter. Yeah, it was nuts. And then he decided halfway through that he didn't want to go in the draft that year. So he withdrew his name, came back in the 2007 draft. People thought he was either going to be the third pick, the 12th pick. The Bucks worked him out. But then his agent leaked that he didn't want to go to the Bucks because there weren't enough Asian Americans in Milwaukee. then they drafted him anyway. It was crazy. And allegedly his only workout for an NBA team was against just chairs.
That sounds like a story from COVID. Yeah. We couldn't have anybody else in the room with him. We all just stayed back and he had to work out against chairs.
Yep. He played for a lot of years in the Chinese League. Still playing over there. And is like a multiple-time All-Star. And then, but his career points per game in the NBA is 8 points a game. Less than one block a game. Just his best year in the league was at 12 points per game for the Nets, the New Jersey Nets, who got him in a trade.
12 points.
12 points a game. And he was a top... What was he, like the What was he? They drafted him sixth overall. And no one had ever seen him play, really. Because back in 07, like, international scouting is, right now, it is so much better than it was even in 2007. In 2007, most of these NBA execs hadn't really seen a lot of these dudes play that much. Right. Now, they've got guys in
everywhere.
And the leagues are really good. And the leagues are on TV. You could watch EuroLeague basketball in the United States with the right TV package. So anybody could have seen, like Luka, for instance. Everyone wanted to give Donnie Nelson credit for quote unquote finding Luka Doncic. They didn't find Luka Doncic. Luka was the most famous basketball player in Europe for a number of years. Like, he didn't find him. He found Dirk because literally no one had seen him play. But Luka was dropped in his lap, basically. This was, everyone knew how good he was from the time he was 14.
Even then, Charles Barkley found Dirk. So
right, Charles found Dirk. that story of Barkley playing Dirk kind of reframes this whole point. It's like, this kid nowadays, everybody would have known who he was after that game. Like, that game would have been on Instagram. That game would have been on Twitter. Everyone would have known this German 16-year-old.
Like,
yeah.
7-foot kid like Caicedo out of the Philippines, is people know about him. He can come to the U.S. and do a developmental league.
So for JT...
That, I guess that doesn't happen 20 years ago.
For JT Thor in 2021 to be shooting up draft boards now when everyone has seen him play high school ball and college ball, just kind of goes to show you that, like, no, this dude is legitimately everything an NBA team wants. He is this clay that has been not molded yet, that an NBA team... He's not even 19 years old yet. He's 6'10", has a 9-foot standing reach. That's the craziest thing. I read that today and I was like, wait, what?
So crazy.
His standing reach is like 9'3".
That's one other guy Auburn fans are going to want to see in the draft. Yeah, Davion Mitchell going borderline top 10. It is kind of crazy to think that he'll... Going into the last year, I don't think anybody thought Davion Mitchell would be drafted ahead of Truth Cooper, both being point guards. But right. It just kind of goes to show how good of a year he had.
I don't know.
Just a lot of it because of age. I mean, you don't really think about the 22-year-old being drafted top 10.
Right.
But he just played so well last year.
And the year before. It's not like last year was a fluke. And I think that's probably what the scouts have looked at, is that he's sustained that for 2 years, just great play for two straight years. And won a national championship, and you know, they don't put as much weight on that anymore as they used to, but it would still factor in. And it's not like he's an old 22, like he's
right.
Yeah. I mean that may play into it as well. He hasn't played 4 years. He only played two and a half.
Really. Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot of miles there, and to get an experienced guy like him and one that is as good as him is probably high on some people's lists.
Yeah. So right now I'm seeing him to the Pelicans at number 10, which is interesting because they actually have some point guards on their roster already, and Lonzo Ball and Kier Lewis. So I don't think he would be going in as a surefire starter.
I don't think Lonzo's going to be there next year.
That's true. Maybe he should go to Philly and Ben Simmons come back to Louisiana.
So, okay, that's a good point, Ryan, because Ben Simmons, I believe, is not going to be in Philadelphia. Ben Simmons is not going to be in Philadelphia by the time the draft is over. I don't think. So there's a good chance he's in New Orleans, Davion Mitchell's in, like, you never know, but.
Sharif Cooper to the Sixers, that could happen too.
I would love that for Sharif. Just throwing lobs to Embiid all day. The wide open floor of an NBA court is going to make Sharif Cooper look even more weirdly perceptive than he are. Like he already looks like a precog from Minority Report. Like he'll make passes next year that people will be like, wait, how did this kid? It, like much like a Facundo Campazzo from Argentina who plays for the Nuggets. He was doing things this year. He's like 30 and a rookie in the NBA. Sharif is so much better than that guy. And he's 19. Chief's favorite player is Facundo Campazzo. He just didn't realize it.
It's got a fun name to say.
Plus he does things like Meg's people. like he'll throw the ball between people's legs and then like laugh about it. Like that's the funniest thing in the world.
So he's like, is he Italian?
He's Argentinian, but his name sounds Italian.
Right. So he's Argentinian Jason Williams. Is that what you're telling me?
100%. And the funny thing about being Argentinian in the NBA is that everyone calls you a Euro still. Like I can't tell you.
He does have a very Euro, right. Euro sounding name, at least.
I can't tell you how many times Shaq and Charles Barkley referred to him as him and Nikola Jokic as a couple of European players. I'm like,
I mean,
this dude could not be further from Europe if he tried.
Like, do you think either one of those guys knows that where Argentina is?
No.
Like that it's not in Europe?
No, because they call Manu Ginobili European for 100 years, too. Argentina is as far away from Europe as you could be.
Yes, but it's the most European of South American countries.
That's true. It is the most European South American country.
Ryan? Do you want to take a break before we get into football talk?
Yeah, then we can talk about why the European nature of Argentina led to so many Nazis fleeing Germany and going to Argentina after the Second World War.
And making it further European.
Yeah. All right.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, and we're back. We've been talking for 32 minutes. If you're still listening to this, thank you. Many people are shaking their heads. Many people are still listening to this, I'm sure. But Ryan wanted to talk about football schedules, which is a great thing to talk about. It's what we talk about in the offseason is things that don't matter. Because these games, obviously, could be rescheduled within the same season as we learned. If we learned anything from the COVID-shortened 2020 season is that we don't have to schedule these games 10 years in advance. Teams were scheduling games a week ahead in advance. Yeah, I guess you can.
You can schedule these games for the, sixth grade class right now, and they'll be ready.
So I have a nephew who is 7, and he will be a freshman in college when Auburn plays Miami. So
that's ridiculous.
We nailed it, guys.
This was a very exciting news for your boy, Chief. I am a noted Miami fan. I have liked Miami for as long as I've liked Auburn, actually.
Were you a fan of Miami because of the U or just for other reasons?
It's a long story. I visited Miami when I was 4. Went to the Orange Bowl parade. Got a bunch of my dad really liked Miami because they wore fatigues to a game, I believe against Alabama, in which they lost. But you know, whatever. My dad really liked them when I was a kid, and so I liked them. That was the U, the original the U era, and then I later visited again when I was a teenager. My aunt, who's only a few years older than me, went there. And they were really good at that time, too. So I liked them. My love for Miami continued. And I still like them to this day. They've struggled for years. So my favorite team playing my other favorite team is exciting for me. I will, however, be 45 years old when this game happens. So and it will have.
You'll have a teenager, right, by this point?
Yes. thanks.
That would be. I think. Hey, seriously though, that is a great first road trip. Would be to go to Miami.
No.
Oh.
I mean, now the last time I went to Miami, I was
14.
No, I was 14. And
the time you can really start appreciating the scenery of South Beach.
Oh yeah, I went to South Beach at 14 years old. We went to South Beach, spent a day there.
What a day it was.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
No one will want to see my 43-year-old self.
Oh God,
on South Beach at that point.
No, that's all you will see there is people that you do not want to see.
That's true.
In a state of undress.
Hey, Sarah, can we go to Auburn versus Miami at Miami and when I'm 43 years old? Oh, we had a shrug. That's a maybe. I'm marking that. Yeah, we're right on our way to Hard Rock Stadium in 2029.
The only reason I say I would not want to take my teenage son is I want to have fun in Miami. Come on.
We live at large. okay, so I have some more thoughts on this, but before we do, did you guys get into the 12-team playoff discussion last week?
We didn't know. Not really, no.
I don't remember if that dropped before the podcast or after.
I think it did. I haven't looked at any of that because, frankly.
So basically, if you haven't heard about it, it's likely coming. I mean, not official, but unofficially official, that they're going to go to a 12-team playoff. That we don't know when just yet, but essentially it'll be the top four teams get a bye, five play 12 for the first round, you know, six plays 11. Then you get down to eight teams and do a three-round playoff from there. Auburn would have benefited from that a lot over the last decade or so. I think probably the 2017 team definitely would have made it in. Potentially maybe the 2019 team if that Iron Bowl win. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on good or bad expanding to 12 teams?
I mean, I'm
not worried about the details yet. Just the concept of expanding the playoff.
There's benefits and like, just like everything in life, there's things that are great about it and things that are terrible, but like the 12-team playoff is awesome. If you want the 2017 Auburn team to have a shot. But, like, should the 2017 Auburn team have a shot? Like, that's the question. Like, Auburn under Gus Malzahn, I think we did the math and put it in the Slack. Like, Auburn under Gus Malzahn would have had a case to make the 12-team playoff three times. And you can make the case that Auburn didn't have a team good enough to be in the playoffs any year under Gus Malzahn. So, why reward them with this? Like, I don't know. Part of me is this doesn't solve the problem of finding the best team any better than a regular old playoff does, because playoffs are a terrible way to decide a champion in the first place. And the other part of me is like, well, this is great because then Auburn gets more television viewing, but you didn't in college sports, what often happens is a problem is discovered and they solve the problem by creating more problems. And similar to the government, I guess. But in college football, it often comes from they claim to be solving the problem of access and saying, we're going to give the mid-majors an actual shot. And they might be giving some mid-majors an actual shot. But the shot is to get blown out at home by a Power 5 team with three losses. And that seems like a crazy concession.
So the way it is going to be structured, as they say, the way they've talked about it, is the top six conference champions by the rankings would get an automatic entry into the playoffs.
Right.
There's only five Power 5 conferences, so that means at least one – at least one group of five conference champion is going to be in. Some years you might get two, probably less likely than, or less often than not.
Last year would have been what? Coastal?
Coastal and Cincinnati, I believe, both would have made it.
And so Cincinnati would have had to host.
What that does is they're not playing number one. They're not going to go play Alabama because that Alabama has a bye.
Right.
So they would have played Texas A&M.
That's what I mean. And like,
you could argue, Coastal would have a good shot against Texas A&M.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or Cincinnati, who played Georgia, what was that, 2 years ago or last year? They played them down to the wire in the Sugar Bowl. That becomes an on-campus game in the first round. If they win that game, then they go play Alabama. But, you know.
Yeah, but you're telling me right now that Coastal or Cincy are going to host in front of, 45,000 fans, Georgia or last year's North Carolina team. I mean, there's just an opportunity for them to get blown out at home. I feel like it's like,
or the 2017 UCF team draws Auburn.
Okay. And Auburn would have had a couple more days off, or maybe not, but I mean, Auburn would be healthy.
But they'd have fewer days off because this is probably happening 2 weeks after conference championships.
But they'd also draw Auburn at home.
Yeah, I think UCF was ranked ahead of Auburn, weren't they?
And this also gets rid of the which team wants to win this game more argument, because Auburn did not care about that Peach Bowl in the least.
Sure.
But Auburn probably would have cared about the game had it been called first round of the playoffs.
Exactly.
So then you get white.
Without a healthy Kerryon Johnson, I'm not sure if Auburn caring mattered a ton. So my point is, yes, it's still very, very, very unlikely a group of five team is going to win the playoff and win the national title. But now they are in the conversation. They do get a chance to host a power conference team, potentially win a game. And then, just like we see in March Madness all the time, it only takes one Cinderella to make it all amazing.
Yeah, but much like we also see in March Madness, and this makes you feel good. It feels good to think that there is now a chance where Coastal Carolina could beat Georgia in Wilmington and then go beat Alabama.
Myrtle Beach, man.
Sorry, Myrtle Beach, sorry. I had
Georgia
confused.
At Myrtle Beach would be,
But it most likely is going to be like March Madness in which, you might get a couple of Cinderella's upset in the early rounds, but by the time you get to the Sweet 16, most of them are gone. Like they cannot last. Or for Chief, it's always fun when you watch the promotion playoffs in Premier League or in the Bundesliga. And like, oh my gosh, this team, Nottingham Forest, gets a chance to play in the Premier League next year. Yeah. Great. We'll be seeing them next year back in the second league. Because at the end of the day, yes, they have a chance of going to the Champions League, I guess. But they're not going to do it.
The counter to that is Leicester came up and won the league the next year.
I mean, yeah, so it's happened. And Leicester was... The odds on Leicester were so bad that you couldn't even bet on them to win the Premier League at some bookies.
Yeah.
They wouldn't take your bet because it was just the odds were so long. So yeah, it does happen, and maybe this will open the door to 1 year a team just goes crazy and runs the table. But I think it's just going to end up where Alabama just makes more playoffs.
I think this...
But we complain about Alabama not having earned it. I mean, this, you give them three playoff games they have to win. I don't know. The 2020 Alabama team is going to beat anybody you put in front of them. It's not really.
I mean, they'd find a way to get to play the three lowest ranked teams that they could possibly play on their way in. So, like the other bracket, the lowest ranked team on that side would make it all the way to the championship. And then they play.
But now when you have undefeated Houston or undefeated UCF or undefeated Boise State, those teams can upset power conference teams.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with expanding it. I mean, every other level of football has a 16-team playoff. I think this 20 years ago made more sense than it does now when you have an Alabama who has all the money. And
that's what I'm thinking. The haves are more – there's more division right now in college football between the level of talent at the very top versus at the very bottom. Like, and even the best power five – best group of five teams rosters aren't even close to Auburn's roster for the most part. Like, it's – and Auburn's not – Auburn's a have, but we're not Clemson.
Right. We're not Alabama. We're not Clemson. I mean, I don't even think an Oklahoma is on the same level as in Alabama.
No.
I think there's been this, and talent wise, there's like three or four programs that are on Alabama's level. It's like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. Who can't
just
do
on
anything
paper,
that talent.
Just on paper.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, the talent, talent-wise. And LSU is close there. I'd probably put them in a second tier with your Oklahomas. But there's still a pretty wide gap there. And as wide a gap there is there, the gap from them to the best group of five team is insane. You know, I'm not even sure those teams deserve a shot.
But that UCF team who beat Auburn, who was their best player?
The dude with the cast on his hand.
He's not in the
league.
Well,
they had, he snapped his leg in half and hasn't played football since.
Yeesh.
No, they had Shaquem Griffin, too, didn't they?
That's what I'm talking about. Shaquem Griffin. He's not in the league anymore.
Is he not?
I don't think so.
I'm not sure.
If he is, I don't think he started.
That
2010
tough.
Boise team was as good as any playoff team. I mean, they weren't going to beat Auburn with Cam, but I think they were a top four team. So it doesn't have to be the case that every year a G5 team is worthy or not, but this does make it so that the times that they are worthy, they'll be in.
Right.
So is that fair to say?
I think that's the argument. I think that there could be a year where there are 12 teams good enough to win the title. That's not this year. And in Auburn's case, things went bad that were out of their control is why that 2017 team didn't win. You know, they didn't make a national championship game. So, or the playoff, as it were, at that time. So I think there's an argument to be made that there could be a year where there are at least six teams worthy that could be worthy.
Yeah, I mean, the first playoff year, you had the whole fiasco with the Big 12 having co-champions, and neither one of them got in because they didn't want to pick one of them.
Right. So I think it alleviates those situations. And yeah, you may have some teams in there that have no business being there, and
just like March Madness, mind you.
Right. I think maybe that's where Crow's coming from. Is this isn't basketball? This isn't March Madness. That's its own thing. You can argue that that's a really bad way to pick a champion too. But although there aren't good ways with 300 and something teams and to do it, so right. That tournament's the best. But I think
basketball is much more of a, like,
well, you can play more than one basketball game a week.
Yeah, but it's also more of a luck. A single game in a basketball game could be won on a last second shot.
Well, like, hold on now. You're talking about the Auburn Tigers here, sort of our thing.
But it's like a staple of March Madness is that a guy could get hot and hit six threes in a game that you've never heard of.
Right.
And he never does anything again the rest of his life. Yeah. Against Alabama, the equivalent of that would be, I guess, Steven Garcia going unconscious, like having just the most ridiculous game of his career. But that is so unique that we talk about it years later, but like, so like, I don't think expanding it to 12 is like, man, every year it's going to be like this. No, most years it's going to be chalk.
Well, it's going to
be chalk.
But it makes the years that you get, you know, Gonzaga versus Baylor all the better, right?
Those are number one.
That's what I'm saying. Despite the result of the game, like, you felt like you got the matchup you wanted.
Yeah, I think it fixes more things than it hurts to expand it. Yeah. That's what I think.
Go ahead, Chief.
I know a lot of people don't want to see it happen for various reasons. It eliminates most of the arguments of what if. And if you're the 13th team left out, you've got a lot less to complain about than if you were the fifth team or the third team left out.
Like the bubble in March Madness, if you were on the bubble, you didn't deserve to be in anyways. If you're the number 15 team in the country, you didn't deserve to be in anyways.
Yeah.
To make the argument that the number 5 team should have had a shot.
And when you're complaining about not getting in when you're on the bubble, you're not complaining because you thought you would win the tournament. You're complaining because you thought that your team was better than could have won a game or was better than another team that got picked to go in.
What I am worried about is that there's going to be a little bit of ranking manipulation just because you know it's going to happen, where maybe last year that Coastal Carolina team is ranked 13th.
All right.
Because their number 12 is maybe a 9-3 Auburn.
Yeah.
Money wise, it makes a little more sense.
Well, as long as there's a committee selecting things, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think the opposite will happen. I think then the committee will be like, we cannot have 5 SEC teams this year. And so,
if it's the difference in a 5th SEC team and a 3rd Big Ten team, you're right.
Well,
I think they could have found a way to hold out maybe a really good 11-1 Houston or a undefeated Sun Belt team or something, you know.
I think they let in a conference champion Sun Belt team.
A second G5 champion.
Yeah, I think they would over a 9-3 team.
You mean to tell me you think this committee is actually being fair and not trying to maximize the profits of the organization that they now serve?
I think they think a Houston getting in is a more interesting product.
Maybe.
Than a 9-3 Auburn versus.
I could see that.
Akron.
The SEC is the most profitable and lucrative conference in all of football. So you wonder if maybe they would relish the idea of putting as many SEC teams in as possible.
But the reality of this, and I think there's other podcasts that do a better job than this, obviously, but the reality of this is that the sport is not growing more national. It's actually growing more regional.
Sure.
It's not growing in popularity in places like Portland or San Francisco or places out west. It's only really growing in the Southeast. And so one of the reasons they expanded the playoffs and are going to expand the playoffs is because they have got to figure out a way to make people in the Pac-12 especially not turn the sport off in September. Because at this point, that's what's happening. The second Oregon loses its first game, the western half of the United States quits caring about the sport.
Yeah.
And
because USC stinks now, and UCLA's stunk forever.
So they've got
Washington kind of missed its window.
Yeah.
So this is 100%.
Arizona State playoff.
Like, how do we keep the western part of the United States interested in the sport going forward?
The NFL?
I think they're going to start. I think you'll see a lot of manipulation in terms of growth markets.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? We could get that lucrative LA market if we let SC in, even though they're not as deserving maybe as another SEC team.
All right, so all of this playoff talk has led me to another question about scheduling. The prime offseason topic about scheduling. I have noticed over the last week or so that a lot of these Power Five programs, especially ones that Auburn wants to consider itself as competitors with, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Florida State, they're all starting to schedule two Power Five teams per season out of conference. And that's because now you're seeing the Big 12, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 are all playing 10 conference games, or 9 conference games, and usually plus one P5 opponent. So just for example, Alabama starting in 2025, they play at Florida State, hosting Wisconsin. 26 is at West Virginia, hosting Florida State. At Ohio State, hosting West Virginia. At Oklahoma State, hosting Ohio State. Notre Dame and Oklahoma State, Georgia Tech and Notre Dame. And this is a common trend for them, Georgia, Florida, and Florida State. And Georgia is actually scheduling three per year with Georgia Tech, and then plus two more. So I'm wondering, Auburn is kind of, right now we've got one per year through 2030 with this Miami edition. I'm wondering if we see Auburn jump on that train and add a second Power Five opponent per year.
Well, and that's one thing that the 12-team playoff also accomplishes, is it gives you the wiggle room to lose a game.
Quality loss has actually become a thing, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Whereas so like really an issue before.
So if Auburn, like Auburn, let's say 2016 Auburn loses to Clemson week one, the season's effectively over. Now you lose the spinning quarterback game. And you is that the one, right?
That's the game. Yeah.
You lose a spinning quarterback game in week one, and you still have the opportunity in 2016 to make the playoff by the end of the year. So if that's the case, why not schedule an opponent like Clemson week one? Why not make a home and home Georgia Tech again?
Yeah, and they don't have to be all you know, these world beaters. You don't have to play Clemson and Georgia and Ohio State every year. You know, you said Alabama's got a year with Oklahoma State and Ohio State, or Georgia Tech and Notre Dame. You know, I mean, Georgia has a home and home with Louisville on the schedule. Florida has, shockingly, Florida is getting in on this on traveling and going to Utah.
That is shocking.
To NC State, to Cal, to Arizona State.
I don't think Florida's Colorado. Played. I don't think Florida's played a non-conference game. Non-bowl game.
Outside of Florida.
Outside of Florida in my lifetime.
Yeah, and they're doing it every other year now. I do have questions about whether this, you know, we just talked about the playoff making it more open for G5 teams. Well, I think you might start seeing it hard for UCF to schedule a Power 5 opponent if Auburn's playing 10 Power 5 opponents a year instead of adding an extra G5 game.
Yeah.
That's going
that to a way to unofficially this, choke them out.
As you said all that, though, are you talking about 10 years from now when we have openings on the schedule? Because we're pretty much got them stacked.
No, but Auburn does. I mean, Auburn has only – let's see.
Auburn
has one Power 5 opponent scheduled per year through 2030.
Yeah, that's
– And I think the next 2 or 3 years they have the non-conference full. But after that, 24 or 25, do you go add NC State? Do you pick up that North Carolina game?
Auburn should do a salute to the troops game for 3 years in a row where they beat Army, Navy, and Air Force in consecutive years.
And then hang a banner for beating all three of them?
Well, because they do a salute to the troops game.
Can we go to those stadiums? Because I would love to go to Colorado Springs.
And, yeah, it's gorgeous. That's a gorgeous campus. West Point. All three are great campuses that your tax dollars have paid for. But I think that having – because we already do a military appreciation week and have very bizarre military-themed Auburn paraphernalia. Might as well play the military academies.
Sure.
Under Armour would love it. They love that crap.
I will say don't save those for your end-of-season non-conference game. You don't want to play those triple-option teams late in the year.
No, but it'd be good to play them like – it'd be good to play them early in the year when the weather's nice in those places and not in Alabama.
Imagine somebody like Army or Navy getting into the playoff as a 12 seed. And
I mean, Ryan,
no 5 seed is going to want to play him.
I love your enthusiasm and I love your positivity about this, but we all know it's going to be four SEC teams, Ohio State and maybe Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas will get thrown in there every so often when it shouldn't, and Alabama.
If you're telling me an 11-1 Navy American champion wouldn't make the playoff? Because we're talking about brands. We're talking about brands being favored here. Any military academy that's close, that's a big market.
It depends. Are they
going to get in over the team that lost the SEC championship?
Yeah, but it's not the team that lost the SEC championships. It's the team that came in third in the West.
No. Because the team that lost the SEC championship, a lot of times, the East, in most years, hasn't been as strong as the West. So you might end up with a team like a Missouri who lost the 2013 SEC championship. Who would have
They were number four going into the conference championship. But they didn't fall all the way to 13.
Or a South Carolina in 2010 who would have had no business being in any sort of playoff conversation. They just happened to win their division. Or who lost the Big 12 championship last year?
Iowa State?
No, I think the year before they had like just some random made the conference championship. Like, well, I mean, sure, they don't really deserve to go to the playoff, but they could, I guess. Iowa State would have been an interesting one. Would they have gotten in last year after losing the conference championship?
I'd have to go back and look at what their schedule and record was, everything, but potentially.
And that's weird. Like, they would have finished. I think they finished overall fourth in the Big 12 or third in the Big 12. They were a huge story nationally for a while. They probably get in over an 11-1 Houston. And they probably shouldn't from a record standpoint. They definitely should from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, so you have 8-3 in the regular season, Iowa State. Or sorry, 8-2 loses to Oklahoma in the conference championship game.
8-3. And they'd be in that son of a gun. They had losses.
Is that a bad thing? Is that a bad thing?
It is if you're an 11-1 Houston team.
But it didn't matter to Houston before. I mean, was never getting in before. Now they have a chance.
That's true. But you didn't really solve the problem of Houston not getting in.
Yeah, but you did. Because if 11-1 Houston is the number one conference champion in the G5,
right,
they're in.
They have to be ranked. So the only way Houston gets in still is if the same people who are keeping them out in the first place let them in now.
Unless there's an undefeated Sun Belt champion or Mountain West champion, a one-loss American champion is probably getting in.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's almost like they tried to do a hybrid model. I don't hate this model, by the way. I just don't think it's the end-all, be-all, greatest thing in the world. I don't think it solved all the problems it claimed, like that the marketing people are telling us that it solved. I think an 8-team playoff with the 6 highest-ranked conference champions and 2 at-large accomplishes the exact same thing. It's just
an
8-team games.
Playoff, they weren't going to give a spot to a G5 team.
Top 6 conference champions, they have to.
They would have done top 5. They would have done all the P5 champions.
And Notre
just
Dame.
Like the BC, and sure, and Notre Dame. It would have been just like the BCS where when you had the Big East as a Power 6, all of them get spots, but only one for the G5. Anyways, I like it. Honestly, Auburn fans should be the most excited about this because Auburn's one of these programs where like we benefit way more than most schools would because Auburn's perennially a
second tier SEC program.
Right. Auburn generally should be hoping for a top 10 team in most years.
Yep.
And now this gets you into a playoff, whereas it got you into maybe the Sugar Bowl, maybe the Capital One Bowl in other years.
And going to the playoff, I'm interested to see the recruiting advantage of that going forward. Like if you're an Auburn team who consistently is making the playoff, are you able to then recruit, hey, we've been playoff 3 years in a row. will that help Auburn sign kids that we haven't been signing? Or will the team up north just go, well, we're winning the same thing every single year? So like, I don't know if it's going to help us actually sign the offensive tackles.
No, I mean, I don't think this affects recruiting that much.
I don't either, because recruiting is now, are you going to put me in the NFL or are you not?
Am I going to play freshman year or not?
Yeah, it's not really about are you making the playoffs or any of that. They don't care about that so much as their own development, which is probably what they should care about in a lot of cases.
What you go to college for.
Sure, yeah. Exactly, all of us.
All right, well, guys, we did 105. No, we did an hour and 5 minutes. So, I think that's pretty. We beat this horse.
I thought we were going short this week.
Yeah, I thought we might, but then we talked a little bit of everything, including the tour. So next week we'll be back with a little bit of tour update. Hopefully, my predictions will all be correct, as I think they will be, and then. We'll actually get to talk maybe about like a real mock draft from people that are reliable, and maybe from Woj. Maybe Woj will have a couple of bombs we can drop on the pod. I like some of the updates I've been reading about Auburn basketball practices from people. Maybe we'll talk a little about those too next week.
Jabari is going to. Oh, man. He's going to go off on some teams this year.
Yeah, I think Jabari Smith's Kevin Durant in a faux mustache. Like he's wearing like a Groucho Marx mustache right now. That's what these are making it look like. All right. Adios. Have a wonderful weekend.